Struggling with letting go of control in divorce? Family law mediator Amanda Singer shares expert insights on mediation, co-parenting, and finding peace in the process.
Welcome to Women Winning Divorce, the podcast helping successful women navigate divorce with dignity so you can protect yourself, your children, and your assets. I'm Heather Quick, founding attorney at Florida Women's Law Group, where women win at life.
This week, we had Amanda Singer on the show, and we had a great conversation about how mediation can offer a stress-free alternative to divorce litigation, the importance of letting go and co-parenting to focus on what truly matters, and how premarital mediation can strengthen relationships before marriage. I hope this episode is valuable to anyone who might be listening. Stay tuned for the full episode. Welcome to this week's episode of Women Winning Divorce. I'm Heather Quick, owner and attorney at Florida Women's Law Group. Today, Amanda Singer is joining us. Amanda Singer is an attorney, mediator, the founder of West Coast Family Mediation, and much more. She is passionate about helping families navigate conflict constructively. Today, Amanda and I will be discussing Mediation Made Simple, a stress-free alternative to divorce litigation, letting go in co-parenting, focusing on what truly matters, and premarital mediation, strengthening relationships before marriage. Welcome, Amanda.
Hi, Heather. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, I'm so excited to have you today. We have a lot of things on our list to talk about that I think are really exciting. Amanda, could you please just tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got into family law and mediation and staying there for our listeners?
Yeah, absolutely. A little bit about myself. So I am a licensed attorney here in California. I am also a CDFA, which is a Certified Divorce Financial Analyst, and I have a master's in dispute resolution. So for me, the path to family law mediation was first learning about it when I was in undergrad, and then deciding, okay, I'm going to go to law school, but I'm not going to come out and litigate family law. I'm interested in doing mediation. So I started mediating when I was in law school. And then after I took the bar, passed the bar, I went straight into mediating. So I've been mediating for about over 13 years now. And that is what I focus on and what the business as a whole is. We only do mediation. We don't handle any litigation of any family law issues. And for me, when I was interested in mediation, I think that family law is an area that really benefits from mediation, as we're going to talk about today, when you've got two people who have to, especially if they have kids together, are going to be maintaining some sort of relationship moving forward. Mediation can be a great way to, you know, start that out on a better foot.
So this is not a, well, I say that, but I could be wrong, but like, it seems to me, I'll just say it seems to me not a typical path, because you really went straight to mediation, where, at least in my experience, say from locally, the mediators, they were litigators, and then they transitioned to mediation towards, you know, middle or latter half of their career. But you did not follow that route. You just went straight into the mediation. And what inspired you to do that?
Yeah, and you're correct. It really isn't the normal kind of path. And I would say, you know, even 13 years later, I'm still on the very young side of the mediation field, because like you're saying, they're usually farther along in careers and kind of second career, or, you know, I'm retiring from litigating and now I want to mediate. But for me, I think that, you know, there were kind of two pieces. So one, growing up, my mom was a therapist. And so I saw that side of things. So she did individual therapy, she did some couples therapy, and just kind of saw, you know, what that looked like. And I thought at one point about, you know, getting my, you know, MSW or something and then becoming a therapist. But I was really interested in the law side as well. And when I learned about mediation and realized, like, oh, this is a career option, that's what I wanted to do. Like, I was interested in the law, but the thought of litigating any kind of cases, but especially in family law, just didn't appeal to me. That I think there were so many benefits. And I think that, you know, for myself, my skills of being able to problem solve, look at it from kind of the different perspectives, it's very different than what you get when you are just representing one client.
Yeah. I mean, well, mediation is so different, but let's tell, for just for our listeners who may not have heard, explain to them, how does mediation differ from going to support in.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think the first thing is just kind of understanding that, you know, what a mediator is, right? So as a mediator, I work as a neutral third party. So that means that I don't represent either of the, let's say, the spouses that I'm working with, as well as, you know, a mediator isn't there to tell the parties what to do or say, like, you know, you have to do something a specific way. They're not a judge, right? They're not making that decision. They are really working with the clients together, and as a in mediation, being able to help facilitate the conversation and communication. That's a big part of what I think my role in mediators in general is. You know, I always say to people, if you could have all these conversations by yourself at your kitchen table, I'd be out of a job, right? But you can't. And, you know, but you know that you want to work together, because that's another thing about mediation, is it's a much more amicable process, right? You know, when you go through court and, you know, you or your spouse hire an attorney, and then the other person automatically hires an attorney, and very often the conflict can rise even more so than it may have been before, because it's one person against the other person, as opposed to in mediation, we're trying to work collaboratively. We're trying to come up with resolutions that are going to be best for the overall family, right? And a lot of times look at it from putting the kids first, of course, but even if they don't have kids or if their kids are grown, it's about how do we work through this together as opposed to fighting against each other.
And now in California, is mediation required or mandatory in California?
So no, except for in California, if you are in court and you file what we call here an RFO, a request for order, and it has to do with custody or visitation, then the courts require that you go to what's called family court services mediation. Now, I'm going to kind of put that mediation in quotes because it's very different from what we do in private mediation, but you do go with your co-parent to meet with a mediator. It's a very short period of time, so it's not an ongoing thing. You're just going to meet with them once. But one of the biggest differences is that for most counties in California, that mediator is what's called a recommending county. And what that means is if you don't reach an agreement with your co-parent at FCS, Family Court Services, that mediator can make a recommendation and does to the judge. And most of the time, the judge just rubber stamps whatever the mediator says to them. So it's very different. In private mediation, we are not ever making recommendations to the judge. In fact, everything in California that we say in mediation is confidential. So if you later end up litigating, you can't say, well, wait a second, in mediation, you offered X and or you said that this happened. It's all confidential. They don't require mediation for the whole case or for anything outside of FCS. But what I will say is the judges are very encouraging of it. And they do want to see that you've tried different options in situations and oftentimes will say, I want you to go to mediation, but it's not required by law.
Got it. And that's, you know, and I have found through interviewing lawyers all over the country that that's the case. So in Florida, it is required for all family law cases. You are mandated to go to mediation before you can have a trial. You can have some temporary issues heard, but not in every county. Some counties, the judges they'll make you mediate before you even can have a temporary hearing. And, you know, for good or bad on that, sometimes cases are too early and it's more difficult. But yeah, so we're very familiar with mediation. And, you know, we obviously there are mediators and individuals, you know, who go just on their own, but everyone who's represented also, we go to mediation too. And it's really, a wonderful process. And I think in addition, like we have, you know, obviously there's mediation in a lot of civil cases as well required. I think mostly because when we're dealing with people and families, if they can come to a resolution, and it's not always possible, but about 95% of our cases, we do. It may seem like we're not going to, but yeah, we're able to. I think it just puts so much more power back into the individuals over basically their fate. A lot of times, not 100%, but a lot of times I think it can reduce the acrimony and the bad feelings later, because at least you had a say and you were a part of that process. compared to being in trial.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's one of the biggest things that I tell people is that you go to court, the judge doesn't care in some instances, but they also don't have the time to care. And you're getting in mediation, you have control over your future. You get to decide what you want those agreements to look like. And we then find that if you make those decisions yourself, people are more likely to stick with them. And they are more likely to either not need additional help in the future and have additional conflict, or they come back to mediation. They're not stuck in this continual process of litigating issues over and over again that takes time, money, stress, all of that.
Absolutely. And some of the, just as like a part to that, so often we see, after the fact, the resolution that maybe couples want, it really isn't available in court. But yet, if you're able to really come to the table together, I think you can get results. Well, I know you can get results in mediation, and you can come up with creative arrangements that just aren't available. The courts are tied by the law and, of course, the amount of time you're in front of them on the decisions they're going to make. And so, which I don't think, most of our listeners and most clients don't really understand that, you have to ask for a particular remedy, and that needs to be something that the court can order your husband, your ex to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And we do that all the time in mediation. I mean, that's part of what I love about it, is getting to problem solve, come up with creative options, thinking outside of the box. And for some people, like, that's what they want, right? Mm-hmm. I like to refer to it, and kind of the term is what we call like interest-based mediation or negotiation. So it's more about like, what are your interests? What are your goals? What's important to each of you, as opposed to just like the position of what you think, should happen. And oftentimes we come up with solutions that they never would have thought of before, and definitely wouldn't happen in court.
Yeah. And I think that is also a huge plus, because you've been doing this with so many different families with different facts and different circumstances, that you have this wealth of knowledge of different things that might work, that for, those folks in the mediation who are in it, right, and just can't figure out, say, a schedule for the kids or things like that, you can bring to them ideas that never may have even entered their mind as possibilities and creative solutions.
Yeah, absolutely.
So walk us through your typical mediation, because I found it's not always what, how we go through the process here in Florida. Walk us through that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think one of the things to know, like you're saying, that it's, processes can be different, is most of our clients are doing the whole process from start to finish with us. So they're never actually going to court. They may be represented. So sometimes they bring their attorneys to mediation. Mm-hmm. Other times they have what we call more of a consulting attorney. So they're consulting with somebody, but they're not coming into the sessions. So for us, the process, usually looks like, because we take care of all the filing for them. So we're filing the initial petition. Here in California, we have required financial disclosures, preliminary declarations of disclosure that have to be completed. So we're working with them to make sure those are completed. And for our process, we start with individual meetings. So I do a usually 1 hour individual meeting with each of them. And the reason that I added that, because I haven't always done that, is that it gives that opportunity to talk about interests and goals and what's really important to each of them. Things that they're not always willing to share when they're meeting together. Sometimes it's either, the hesitancy of, I don't want to give my cards away, I don't want to show my cards, or just whatever it is. And also, I like to ask questions of things they might want to share with me about their relationship, triggers that might come up, so that I can better handle it when we meet together jointly. So I find that those individual meetings are really valuable to then help the joint meetings move more smoothly. And so then after we have the individual meetings, we'll have joint meetings, and the number of joint meetings varies. I mean, I have some couples where it might be fairly simple and we meet for 2 2-hour meetings, and I have others where we might meet for 10 2-hour meetings. So it just kind of depends. However, the one thing that's usually always consistent is, if they have children, the first session starts with the parenting plan. And so that's going to be the first thing we talk about. And for some people, that takes the full first session, and it might take multiple sessions. Other times, get everything done and then we move on from there. But, I kind of break it into three main areas: the parenting plan, There's support, so child support and or spousal support. And then there's the division of the assets and debts, or, you know, California is a community property state. So community property that we're discussing. And there's always peripheral issues that come in, but those are kind of those three, I'd say, main buckets you can divide things into. And then once we have reached agreements, we are drafting those settlement agreements for them. So again, in California, we call it a marital settlement agreement. So we draft those and then the clients review it. They review it with consulting attorneys. They might review it with financial professionals, their CPA. We get that finalized and then we file everything for them. So like I said, most of my clients never have to step foot in court for any hearings or anything like that. Everything happens through our office.
And so I never, until I did this show and have had the opportunity to interview so many people, I didn't know that a mediation went like that. Because here in Florida, and especially in our practice, in our area, I mean, we go for the whole day, some days 2 days in a row, but that's it. You know, we show up, so we've done a lot of preparation ahead of time, right, to work through all the issues, have all the financials, but then we go, and that's the day, and it's a long, long day of negotiating, going back and forth, and hopefully at the end, you know, we are signing an agreement. But it's a very different style than what you do. And I really like the way you guys do that, because I think that taking it in small chunks like that makes a lot of sense. It might not, I don't know, did you do that with attorneys too? Because I just think for individuals, like, that can be so much easier just to take, you know, parts at a time.
Yeah. If they have attorneys present, I'm often doing longer meetings.
Okay.
I'd say we still break it down, although I have done full days and half days. Like, it's less common than kind of the way I do it, because it also, sometimes they don't bring their attorneys to all the meetings, or they do. But yeah, so sometimes we'll do longer meetings with attorneys, but especially if they don't have attorneys or other advisors with them, I find that 2 hours is like the maximum amount of time they can focus. Like, and then you may even see that when you have clients with attorneys, that it's just, it's a lot for them and it's a lot to think about. Sometimes we need additional information, right? Sometimes, you know, we're talking through things and we're realizing, okay, well now, you know, we're talking about the house and we need to find out, can you even qualify to assume or refinance the mortgage, right? Like, there's certain things that it's helpful to say, okay, here's the, I don't like to call it homework, but here's your action items for our next meeting, right? Mm-hmm. Here's the things we're going to discuss. And so I do find that those shorter meetings, I like 2 hours, because I think much shorter than that, you can't get through much at all. But you get beyond 2 hours and I can just see people kind of eyes glaze over and they're shutting down.
Yeah, it's a lot for sure. You know, we work through that process and, you know, obviously battle those same kind of things. But they know going in, right? Like, they're prepared and we've had a lot of time up to that. But, you know, let's kind of shift a little bit, because I think for parents, like, I'd love to know what advice you have for parents, like, just struggling to accept that they can't control everything that happens at the other parent's house. Because I think that's just a really common feeling that many parents have, many of our women clients, you know, they struggle with that.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And I see that as well, even in mediation, even when they're communicating, because there is a lot of times there's a difference in parenting styles, or just a difference in what they think should happen or should not happen. I mean, I even see that I'm married and we have a daughter, and there's still times where I'm like, well, that's not how I would do that. And so I think that the best advice that I have is sometimes it's picking the best. It's figuring out what is the top, like, the safety issues, the things that it's like you're not willing to budge on, right? Okay. That there are certain things where it's like, if that's happening, like, that's a problem, versus the smaller things. And figuring out, and if you, you know, in that sense, pick your battles and do that, your co-parent also comes to learn, like, okay, this is really important, right? Versus if they feel like you are nitpicking on everything they do, from, you know, exactly what time you feed them to what toys they play with, you know, to everything, they're going to just want to ignore you. And they're going to want to potentially push back even more, right? Because when people feel like they're being controlled, they oftentimes will push back even more, and they're not going to listen. But if you are only you know, be, you know, pushing on the really important big things and you communicate why that's important. Oftentimes that other person, your co-parent, the other person is able to see it more mm-hmm. so because they know it's important at that point.
I think that's great advice because it's hard in my experience to watch clients, you know, what, because they're like, well, everything is so important. This is my child, right? Every ultimate decision, but yet you got to be able to triage it down and figure out like what in reality is mm-hmm. a major thing to focus on versus a small thing. And then, you know, how much counseling do you provide in mediation with folks as far as like, you know, and I don't know, so that's why I'm asking, like, as far as saying, you know, like, that's not going to happen in court. Because like, that's how we counsel our clients, right? Because we're there to advise yeah. them on the law. And a lot of times, you know, I try to, you know, I have in the past, say, okay, let's look at this in a way that what can we achieve here today that we wouldn't get in court? Yes, it's a compromise. You may have to give something, but like, you know, you want every, I'll just gonna say Christmas Eve, right? You want something that like really mm-hmm. important they're not gonna have, or there's something super special that you really want that we know you're not gonna get otherwise. And I try to help them with that. See, like, okay, that's the big picture, right? And that's mm-hmm. part of the compromise. And I wonder, how are you able to help them see that?
Yeah, absolutely. So I kind of like to differentiate in my role that like, I can't give legal advice because mm-hmm. I don't represent either. And what you would say to each of them might differ, but I can give legal information. And one of those things that I do talk about is like, what could happen if you are in court? Mm-hmm. Now, I'm going to look at it from both perspectives, right? So I'm going to do more of that. And I do want them to have someone like you, have an attorney that they can go to say, okay, well, from my perspective, what would you advise? What do you think would happen mm-hmm. or not? But in the mediations, we do talk about that because that's the alternative. So there's two terms. There's what's called a WATNA and a BATNA. And I'm sure you've heard this before, but I'm sure a lot of listeners haven't, which is your best alternative to a negotiated agreement and your worst alternative to a negotiated agreement. And so I will have those conversations with them. Those are oftentimes conversations I might have in a breakout room or I might have in that mm-hmm. initial individual meeting because they don't always want to like think about that together. But I encourage them to think through what is your best and worst alternative because it gives you the opportunity to think about where can I compromise? Because mediation is a process of compromise. I say to clients at the very beginning, like, if you're not willing to compromise on anything and you're going to say it's my way or the highway, like, don't do mediation because I'm not going to be able to help you. It doesn't matter how good yeah. I am or any other mediator is at their job. You've got to be willing to compromise. But if you can think about the areas that are super important and think about the areas that you know you're not actually going to get a better resolution in court, you can start to see where you might be willing to agree, even if you thought, okay, I wanted something different.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's so important because, you know, so many of individuals going through a divorce and this process have never been through it before. And even if they have, like, this is different because mm-hmm. it's a different relationship. And certainly when there's children and, you know, what we see on TV and in the movies about the legal world is so different in my experience mm-hmm. than the reality. And most of the clients don't know. And, you know, when they're offered this opportunity, especially with the way you do that, like just many sessions where they can really talk and work through these areas of decision making, it's just so different than it will ever be in a courtroom. And in some cases are destined, like it just happens. Although I find the majority, even though sometimes the cases we thought, oh, this will never settle, we can. There's mm-hmm. always that point. But it's really important for everybody to understand at least what's possible if I don't make these agreements. You know, if I can't come to mm-hmm. terms, what will this look like out there?
Yeah.
And because that helps you make a better decision, knowing, right, your risk and reward. What am I risk?
Absolutely. I will tell you that I think the cases where the clients actually have a really good attorney or consulting attorney, even if they're not in the session, mm-hmm. who is realistic with them and having those conversations, we are actually more likely to settle because the clients actually understand what exactly would happen otherwise, right? If they either don't have an attorney or they have an attorney that's setting unrealistic expectations, which unfortunately mm-hmm. happens, then they don't want to settle because they think they're going to get something so much much better in court, and there's only so much I can do in my role as a neutral to get them to see that. So I do find that that is a really important part of it, is having the advisors who can help them see some of the different things that they might be looking at the wrong way.
Yeah. And I, you know, we do that every now and then, not as often, but we'll just have a consultation. We'll consult, like hire us to consult, or you want to work through it yourself, you know, but, and then come to us and then we can help you understand, right? Like, is what you're agreeing to good deal, bad deal, kind of decipher it out. And I do. Yeah. And then when people are able to make a good decision, I think you're right. They are, they're more likely to follow exactly what you said, but also feel more, right? They may not, they know, you know, I didn't get everything I wanted, but everything I wanted is just unrealistic and not happening anyway. So this was a good way for me to be free from this marriage, however, you know, have a livable result. And sometimes the results are great, because the couples are so much better able to co-parent once they're separate than when they were together. And it allows for, in many cases, now not all the cases that I see, right, because they're all litigated, but like a happier family, even though they're not together.
Yeah, that one of the core values of our business as a whole is the idea of a positive transformation. Like, we want them to leave better than they came in. I don't want things to be worse after. Part of that, like you're saying, is the hope that they may just not have worked well married. They may not have been, you know, that wasn't working anymore. But that doesn't mean that you can't have a really great co-parenting relationship. And everyone's is going to look different. So it's not like it has to look a certain way to be great. It's just whatever's going to be great for your kids and work for you and your co-parent.
All right. So that made me think of something that I just got to ask you, because how many, you know, how often, or I guess, how do you handle this? Because I imagine this has happened before, because you've got the clients coming in and one person's like, well, you know, my girlfriend, Jeannie down the road, got da 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 da, and that's what I want.
Yeah. I hear that all the time.
So yeah. So then how do you address that for them? And for our listeners who are thinking that exact same thing right now.
Yeah. Yeah. So the things that I usually say to them is just like right off the bat, like every case, every situation, every family is different, right? So, you know, keep in mind that what your friend got or what went on in their case may just not at all apply to you. The other thing I like to tell people is you don't know the whole story of their case and their situation either. And so, you know, you're saying that, oh, well, you know, you think that their spouse makes the same amount of money as your spouse. And so, you know, they got this and you should have gotten this. But like, you don't know what the whole story is. You're just hearing whatever that one person is sharing with you. And you haven't seen all the financials and you haven't. And I say the same thing to them. I'm like, well, and I haven't seen all of that, right? So I don't know why your friend got what they got in their case and you think that you should be getting the same and you're not. All I can do is focus on with you what your situation is and help you figure out, okay, how can we reach a resolution with what yours looks like? Because I yes, we get that a lot.
I think that's normal. So for our listeners, like, that's normal, but like, there's so much more to it, because we're dealing with people and their own facts. And a lot of times, you know, for our listeners, they're not going to tell you the stuff they don't want. And that's okay, because you don't want to share that either. So just understand there's usually a lot that goes into it. I have that oftentimes with clients and their parents, right? And then they come back and like for us and they're like, oh my God, my parents are so mad. It's like, but you know, they have to, you are the one who has to parent this child and you have to make these decisions. And they may disagree, but yet, and also, oh, let me ask you this. I'm rambling all over the place, but then I come up with another idea, because like in Florida, it's all confidential. And so, of course, we tell our clients, the mediator tells them when we start, everything's confidential. So you're not to go out here and tell your best friend, your parents, everything that went on during these negotiations. And I imagine yours is the same way for that purpose, right? To like keep it private.
Yeah, absolutely. And we talk about that. We talk about what's confidential. I remember, I mean, this seems commonplace now, but I remember like first starting out and realizing we had to talk about like, you can't go and post what we talked about online.
Oh,
like you can't go put this on, you know, you're not going to go put this on Facebook at the time or whatever it is now. Like you have to realize that this is private, this is confidential. And I do find that that's easier sometimes when we talk about, I can say to them, like if they have kids, imagine if your kids found what you had posted or if your kids kids overheard you talking about it? Like, would that be something that you would want them to hear? You know, and if it's not, it's not something that you should, you know, you should be discussing.
And I think that also in a lot of ways, you know, it gives the, you know, clients comfort. Like, listen, you're not supposed to. You know, I know, you know, you may feel like you have to justify things to your friends, your family, who think he's the worst, you know, SOB ever and should never see the kids and give you all the money and live on the street. And it's like, well, why would he agree to that? Like, you know, it's like, this is a process. And you really don't want the father of your children desolate, like, because they need to, you know, have a relationship. And, but I find that a lot of that, which, you know, it stems from our legal background and knowledge, because we know the law, we know in basically how things will play out most of the time, but yet it's just so emotional. I mean, there's so many emotions in people making these decisions that seem so final, don't they, for our clients? Like, oh my gosh, like for the rest of my life, right? You know, I don't get to see my kids every other weekend or something, you know, and it's really in the grand scheme of things a short term, but I think it's very hard for people sometimes to accept this document or these agreements, particularly as it relates to children, because they feel like it's just so final forever and it's going to be so much more difficult than maybe it really will be.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we always talk about, I don't know how it is Florida, but California, any parenting plan terms are always modifiable. So like, if it's not working, it can be changed, right? And that's because as kids get older, things are going to change and it's not always going to work the same. And so I like to say it as like, it's okay if something doesn't end up working, right? Like you don't, this isn't written in stone and you can never change anything. However, you may also find that something you thought was crazy actually works great for you guys. And so trying the things out and being open to it, you may find that you're a better parent because you have every other weekend with your kids as opposed to every week, right? Like it's kind of getting them to shift the mindset around what it looks like. And, you know, with that, I love to, you know, really get them to work with, whether it's divorce coach, therapists, like getting, you know, to really help if they need that mind shift. Mindset shift, because it makes the whole thing so much easier.
I agree. Yeah. Like having those other sources, more, a little more therapeutic, just from another perspective, you know, and it is hard because, I mean, yes, the parenting plans are modifiable, but the standard here in Florida is pretty stringent. There does need to be some material changes, and it always does have to be in the best interest of the child. And so sometimes, you know, and that's where it's like, we try to really help them. Like, you know, if you have to, I mean, ideally, right, for clients, hey, we understand we've agreed to this and within the spirit of it, we're going to go, but we're not looking at this paper every week trying to, you know, nitpick. We're going to work with one another, but it's, you know, it's a new way of living compared to the way they were before, but hopefully better, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
All right. This is really cool because I do not know that I have ever heard of premarital mediation. I love it. So I want to hear all about it.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think it's growing, but it's not super common. So I'm not surprised, you know, haven't. So premarital mediation. So we've talked about mediation, the idea that you've got a neutral third party. And most of the time people know it for divorce mediation or parenting mediation or, you know, one of those. Well, you know, if you're getting married and you are, you know, most of the clients are interested in like a premarital agreement, prenuptial agreement, prenup. They all mean the same thing, but like, you know, calling it premarital mediation. And so oftentimes, if you are putting together a prenup before you get married, what happens is one person goes and gets an attorney, and they may not even really involve the other person. Hopefully they told them, but they're not like in part of it. That attorney asks them, okay, well, what is it that you want in this prenup? Most of the time, what are you trying to protect, right? And they draft the prenup up, they give it to the other, their fiance, they take it to an attorney, and there's very little communication of like, well, what do you guys actually want? How are you wanting to handle your marriage? And communication around building like a strong foundation. And so what I've found with premarital mediation is, again, I get to act as a neutral, and because I'm not representing either, I can sit down with both of them. And so I'm able to meet with both of the future spouses together, and it becomes more of a conversation and a collaboration around what do you want in this prenup, right? What's important to you? What are you coming into the marriage with? How do you want to handle things during the marriage? And mm-hmm. what happens if you did happen to separate, divorce, you know, any of that? And we also will often talk about, you know, marriage is going to end in one way, right? Either you've divorced or one person dies. And so we're going to talk about death as well. We're going to talk about how you may want to set your future estate plans up, and then they're going to go and do that. But it's just much more of a collaborative conversation. And I look at it as like learning to communicate better, talking about some of the things that people don't talk about before they get married. I mean, how many people who don't know, how much does your spouse make or how much debt do they have? Like, they don't have those conversations. And so we're doing a full financial disclosure because that's part of a requirement for the prenup, but we're having those conversations and we're making sure that everyone's on the same page. And then they take it to their own attorneys. But by that point, they already know what's in it. They know what they wanted to have as part of the conversation. And so we're able to make sure that it's what they both wanted.
When I read this, like premarital mediation, it makes so much sense. And I agree with you on the standard or historical practice, right? It's exactly like you said with a prenup. And then sometimes the, you know, some of the other side gets it and they're like, well, what is this? Like, this isn't anything that I thought. And then they bring it to an attorney and we said, this is what this all means. And they're like, no, I never talked about that. That doesn't seem right. Right. And so there, it's not when we do it that way. And it's not by anybody having any bad intent. Right. It's the attorney listening to their client, drafting it up, giving it to them. And, you know, the people trying to talk or sending it to the other lawyer. But like, there'd be such a better way that could be handled. And I've thought about that very often. But I think particularly what you're talking about in discussing these things, it's the important things that aren't discussed. Like, how are you going to handle your finances? You know, let's be open. Like, let's not just disclose everything after the marriage. Let's talk now. And and those conversations, like, right? Because if you can't have a hard conversation, like when you're all in love and ready to get married, like, right? We know when things get bad, you're really not going to be able to have that conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think a couple of things that I've found, some of the research has shown that like, if you have a prenup, you're actually almost less likely to get divorced than you are. Because some people think of them as like, oh, well, you're just preparing for divorce. And it's like, no, you actually, in essence, are hopefully not, you know, not going to end up needing it because you've started with a stronger foundation. One of the analogies that I like to talk about with clients is I kind of refer to it as like insurance. So I talk about the idea that like, you don't buy, you know, here in California, you know, fire insurance because you hope your house burns down, right? You buy it because you hope nothing ever happens. But if it does, you want to have some protection. And so I say the same thing with a prenup is the idea that you're not planning to get divorced, but also nobody who gets married plans to get divorced, and yet we still have a divorce rate somewhere around 50% in this country. And so we're going to talk about everything and put some things in place such that if you did get divorced, you've got some agreements and things in place already, and you're hopefully fighting over less things because you're doing it when you love each other and you're happy. You're not doing it when you're now potentially very mad at the other person or there's been infidelity or whatever it is. And so it's just being able to have those agreements in place from the beginning.
Now, in your experience, do you see that more common, maybe a little bit, and when I say older, maybe not like those marrying in their 20s, you know, maybe a little bit older and or second marriages? Do you see this? Is that, I don't know if that's been your experience or not.
Honestly, I do a mix. I do a fair amount of like first marriages. What I will say is people are older when they're getting married, right? So
they have more going into it, right? Yeah.
Absolutely. And I, you know, I was in my mid-30s when I got married. My husband and I have a prenup. Like, I had my business already. You know, we had a home. There were different assets. So I think that people are coming into marriage sometimes with more to want to discuss already. But then, yes, especially for if it's a second or a third third marriage, then that's even more important, because at that point, you oftentimes have children from a first marriage. And so thinking about what do you want to protect for them, right? You know, mm-hmm. from the perspective of what you might be building as a community and could go to your spouse versus what you want to also protect for your children. So I do see a fair amount of that, but I will say, I think it's mixed. I think that there's okay. both. And I think that there is more, there's still some stigma around prenups, but I think it is more open than it's been in the past. People are mm-hmm. willing to talk about it. And, you know, I think too, premarital mediation is a great option when one person definitely wants one and the other person is unsure, because it does yeah. allow us to sit down and talk.
And I think that's important, because, you know, we go to, you know, whatever movies, you know, pop culture, and you have an idea in your head. You have an idea in your head of what this means, when in actuality, yeah. it could be very good for you and it could be a very smart thing to do, but you just need to understand. And I think it's great that that stigma, there is less of it, because I do think it's a better way to enter into a marriage mm-hmm. than just blindly without at least discussing the issue.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, that is really great, because I think, you know, I have one more question. I can't believe we're running out of time, which is crazy. But, you know, many women feel anxious about standing up for themselves in a mediation setting. What advice you have for them?
Yeah. So there's a few pieces of advice that I would give there. I mean, one of them is, I do find that, like, we do those one-on-one meetings, it helps, because it helps to understand that. So you could always even ask your mediator, do they offer individual meetings? Do they ever break out into sessions, right? To be mm-hmm. able to know, okay, if you really feel that you can't stand up in front of your spouse, can you do it without them there, right? Can you tell the mediator what your concerns are, and then maybe they can help you with it. The other advice that I think is important is having the right support system. And what I mean by that is, you know, having a good attorney, having whatever other professionals might be helpful, whether that's a coach, that could be a CDFA, that could be, you know, someone who's just going to help you stand up for yourself, and you can bring them to the mediation, mm-hmm. right? So we already talked about that you could have your attorney there for mediation, but I have had people where you might have a divorce coach that is, you know, part of the mediation, and especially having the CDFA, the Certified Divorce Financial Analyst, depending on what it is that you feel concerned about standing up for, you might think about who could you have present in the mediation to help you with that, because they're going to be able to remind you, they know what's important to you, and they're going to help you, you know, figure out, oh no, I shouldn't give on that. That's not what I wanted. I need to stand up for it. So mm-hmm. I think that that can be really helpful. And, you know, a way to just kind of ease some of those concerns.
I think that's great. And it's wonderful advice. Now, when we typically go to mediation, you know, at the very beginning, the mediator will, you know, they explain, and usually sometimes we're all together, but sometimes we're separate, because now mm-hmm. most of our mediations are virtual. But the mediator will tell our clients, right, that, you know, one, everything's confidential, but also I am going to share things. However, if you tell me something like, please don't share this, I will keep that confidence. And I think, and I am sure you do the same thing, I think that really puts people at ease too, because they're like, okay, if I want to tell you something, I don't want you to tell the other side.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And I talk about that with the individual meetings, exactly mm-hmm. like you said, that, you know, things are confidential. If I think that something might be helpful to discuss, I'll ask you if I can bring it up, or do you want to bring it up? And mm-hmm. we even do that too. I might talk with them about, okay, what's the best way to have this conversation, right? Yeah. And so, you know, being open and honest with your mediator. And that's why, like, it's really important when you're looking for a mediator to find someone that you trust. You want to make sure it's somebody that you are able to feel comfortable with, mm-hmm. especially if you're going in self-represented and you don't have an attorney yeah. or someone else with you. You really need to feel that comfort with the mediator so that you're not ignoring your instincts and not, you know, sharing the things that are important to you.
That is, yes, that's great advice. And we are, we've had a great conversation. I can't believe we're almost at the end, but Amanda, before we go, you know, our show is called Women Winning Divorce. And I would love to know, what does winning at life mean to you?
Yeah, that was a great question. I like thinking about that. Gosh, I mean, there's so much to it. I think, you know, I have a 1.5-year-old daughter now. And so, you know, a lot of it is being able to just like enjoy life, right? So having, you know, I love my business and the work I do, and also being able to have time with family and time with friends, and just trying to be able to, I don't like the word balance, so I don't use that, but just trying to be able to integrate it all together, mm-hmm. and, you know, feel the joy and be able to like have the time to actually like experience it.
That's awesome. Yeah. I like to use the word harmony, right? Because the balance is just like, it's like, I just want to be in harmony. Sometimes, you know, one side's more than the other, but I think that is a great win. And having time with our loved ones to enjoy that is so important. Lastly, yeah. Amanda, where can our listeners find you for more information?
Yeah, absolutely. So website's probably the easiest. So westcoastfamilymediation.com, same as the business name. And from there, you can find, we've got a really extensive blog with a lot of different articles and information. And then all of our social stuff is on there as well. So you can find LinkedIn, all of that.
Well, thank you so much. We've reached the end of our show today. And thank you to Amanda Singer for joining us to discuss how mediation can offer a stress-free alternative to divorce litigation, the importance of letting go in co-parenting to focus on what truly matters, and how premarital mediation can strengthen relationships before marriage. Thank you, Amanda.
Thank you, Heather.
Listeners, if you or someone you know in the Northeast Florida area is going through or even thinking about divorce, you're not alone. Taking that first step can feel overwhelming. But it doesn't have to be. Our newsletter is filled with actionable advice tailored to guide you through this process. By signing up, you'll gain the tools to face the unknown with courage and see if we're the right fit to support you during this life-changing time. Don't wait. Click the link in the show notes, fill out the form, and take the first step toward building a brighter future today. This podcast is for informational and entertainment purposes only and is not an advertisement for legal services. The information provided on this podcast is not intended to be legal advice. If you have a legal issue, please contact an attorney in your local jurisdiction. The views and opinions expressed by the hosts and guests are solely those of the individuals and do not represent the views or opinions of the firms or organizations with which they are affiliated. This podcast is available for private, non-commercial use only. Any editing, reproduction, or redistribution of this podcast for commercial use or monetary gain without the expressed written consent of the podcast's creator is prohibited.